Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a bi-weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Pollinencia, and we are glad you're here. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church.
Episode number 82. Today's big idea, well, it's the releasing of my very first book. I know, I'm promoting my own stuff. Well, it's my podcast with Drew, so here we go. It's called A Quest for Friendship. Let's get to it.
Welcome to this edition of the Idea Talks podcast. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about something that is very, very first time on our podcast, and that is, well, in life for you.
Yeah, in life. I've never done this before.
Big news. The big reveal here.
Yeah, I've written blogs before, but I've never written a book. And I thought, hey, how hard could it be? Right? I mean, I wrote papers in school. Yeah. I've written blogs, three or four of them that people have read. And I thought, hey, why don't I just do this? Why don't I just sew together like 13 or 15 of my blogs and make a book? And then I did that, and I could not find 13 or 15 blogs worth putting into a book. So I said, maybe I'll just start from scratch and write an entire book.
Now, before up until this point, what was the longest thing you ever wrote before?
Oh, man, I don't know. That's a good question.
Was it a blog, an essay?
Yeah, probably a series. Paper? I mean, we had some major papers that we had to write for my Master of Divinity. But no, I would probably say some of the most important and longest would be a series of blogs that I've done. For example, last year I did, about a year and a half ago, I did that three-part series on the King James Version. Those were long blogs. A blog is supposed to be what? Anywhere between 600 and 1,000 words, if it's going to be a long blog. Dog with a blog says that it should be less than that. I'm kidding. Dog with a blog.
I don't even know what that is.
That's a kid's show.
Oh.
You've never heard of Dog with a Blog?
I have lots of kids, too.
Well, it was my kids. But my kids were younger.
I'll have to look
my
that
kids
up.
Are older now. Dog with a Blog. You dog never heard about that,
no,
huh?
Never have.
Yeah. It was, well, here's the premise. Let me lay it out for you. Yeah. There's this dog.
Okay.
And he has a blog. Yeah.
I love that the plot line's so evident.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they don't hide anything from
me. No, I mean, it gets right to the point. You watch the first episode, like, oh, yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
My kids are just watching Molly of Denali these days.
Oh, okay. See, I am so far beyond Molly Denali?
Molly of Denali. It's great.
Molly of Denali. Yeah. Oh, it sounds like they're teaching cultural things.
Yeah. Yeah. She lives in Alaska, catches fish from the stream. It's great.
Very cool, man. Yeah. Okay, well, no.
See, anyway, your book.
My blog. Oh, yeah. So anyway, I've written some stuff, but the book itself was just fantastic to put together. I really enjoyed it. The difference, what was weird, I was telling you this before we started recording. For me, one of the key differences between writing, and I know we've got a lot of writers out there, our audiences are leaders, and they are readers, and they like to read. Not only do they like to read, they're dipping their toe in the writing realm. And I mean, there's several great writers if I begin to name them, but so many of them have begun to write even for the Idea Network blog, which is just blowing up and doing a great job. I had a friend years ago kind of prompt me and push me to start writing. It was Steve Miller. And he said, man, you just ought to just every week put out a blog. And then I had another friend who's an evangelist in Tennessee, and he said to me, read Michael Hyatt's book, Platform. And so I did and learned more about social media, and it talked about writing a blog. And the idea, the practice of just sitting down every single week and putting 400 to 500 words on paper was a discipline. And it was so good for me because it made me begin to really think through what I believed about a specific subject. And that's how the blog started. And maybe that's what you're doing right now. Maybe you're starting to write. I would encourage it. Continue to do so. Write if nobody is going to read it but Jesus himself. Just write and put it out there. You can put it in a blog or you can write it and put it. My wife writes every single week and she just puts it in a file inside of her computer and she's developing some of it. Nobody, the world will never see. Some of it's going into her own book that she's going to actually just give to the children. It's something she's going to pass down to the children whenever they graduate. So, but writing is a lost art. It's something that you should do. And I've enjoyed it. The difference between the blog and the book was there's an instant gratification that comes whenever you put a blog out. like social media.
Sure.
You just throw it out there and immediately you find out, oh, nobody's going to read this and nobody likes it. Yes. Or immediately it blows up and people, oh, this is really interesting and this is really good. A blog you work on, a book you work on for 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, and you realize nobody's going to see any of this for a year. And that part's fun because now that the book is coming out, it's going to be great to see how it's received by church laymen, ministry leaders, Idea Network, our church, people around you.
I love your edification for those out there that are inclined to write, to do that. Yeah. I remember asking a very specific question at some class in college. I was like, why don't more independent Baptist people write? You know, because like all the books that they read are from Methodists or Lutheran or, you know, whoever. And the answer I was given was like, because they're too busy out soul winning.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
That just seems like a cop out. Like, I'm like, why is that? And like, I think it's awesome that we have quite a few people like yourself and, you know, even Carrie Schmidt wrote a book recently, which we'll be talking about in a future episode.
No, I heard the same thing. Yeah, we're too busy doing the work to write about the work. And, you know, that's a broad brush, but,
sure.
But in reality, you're seeing a lot of great content coming from a lot of great places right now. And it's fun.
So let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
What is the title of this book?
Yeah, okay. Quest for Friendship is the title.
The Quest for Friendship or Quest for Friendship?
The Quest for Friendship. Okay. Yeah. And the idea there is, so as I began to write it, I'm a storyteller. I like stories. I'm a story reader. And there are several very inspiring quotes from either movies or books that really begin to prompt my heart toward the concept of friendship in the first place. I mean, one of the greatest literary friendships of the last 150 years is that of Frodo and Sam from The Lord of the Rings.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Right? It really is. And very few books. This is what I find fascinating. Very little in literature as a whole speaks to friendship, or art as a whole speaks to friendship. There's a heavy emphasis on romance. So many songs written about romance, so much poetry written about romance, so many movies, all romance. Everything's about a man and a woman coming together. And how much of it really is about friendship? And in reality, romance is incredibly important, but friendship has been devalued, especially in the last 100 years, in a very unhealthy way. And so when you look at literature and you look at art as a whole and you begin to see friendship and look for it, it begins to stand out nearly everywhere. I mean, you've seen Lord of the Rings. You know Lord of the Rings. The story is the story of a fellowship of friends, a true small group of friends that are there for each other. But some of them happen to be closer to each other than others in the group. But they all love each other, and they're a small group of friends.
Yeah, I love that scene when all the dwarves are sitting around the table eating for the first time in the house, right? And like, you get to see all their personalities and their names and all this kind of stuff. But much less, you know, like Frodo and, you know, Samwise, there's a lot of parallels there, even to like Moses and Joshua and, you know, people holding up Moses' hands when he's fighting. And, you know, Samwise saying like, hey, like, if you can't go the final mile, I'm going to, you know, carry you with it.
Yeah, if you can't do it, I'll carry you myself. And it's a beautiful example of what friendship is. It's a beautiful example of what friendship ought to be. So what does that have to do with a quest for friendship? Every single one of my chapters begin with some type of literary or a cinematic quote that goes back, or poetic quote, or scriptural quote, that goes back to a specific friendship that really can bring inspiration for us to develop that friend and friendship, or a quote specifically related to that specific chapter. I mean, that is what chapter one begins with. The first chapter is entitled The Necessity of Friendship. You're not the exception. And this is my favorite Lord of the Rings quote. When Sam says at the end of Fellowship of the Ring, he says, I wonder if people will ever say, let's hear about Frodo and the ring. And they'll say, yes, that's one of my favorite stories. Frodo really was courageous, wasn't he, Dad? Oh, yes, my boy. He was famousest of hobbits. And that's saying a lot. And when Frodo says this, it knocks me down every single time. Frodo says, you left out one of the chief characters, Samwise the Brave. I want to hear more about Sam. Frodo wouldn't have got very far without Sam.
That's good.
I mean, when Tolkien writes this, you can almost feel that Tolkien is talking about C.S. Lewis. And the friendship that they had... it was palpable. I talk a lot about in the book C.S. Lewis's wonderful book, and if you've never read it, you've got to get it. It's incredible, called The Four Loves. This is where you've heard, everybody's heard a preacher. In fact, some of the preachers on here will say, oh yeah, I've done that, and didn't know maybe where it came from. We've talked about three different kinds of love, phileo and agape and eros, and it's like, okay, where does this come from? Well, we think, even though these are different Greek words that are found in the scripture, where the revelation of these words come from is a short book by C.S. Lewis called The Four Loves, and it is beautiful because the essence of the book is to talk about friendship, the difference between eroticism, romance, the difference between phileo, a personal friendship, and he talks about storge quite a bit. Storge, which is a word that's not used in the scripture, meaning natural affection. There is a natural affection that some people have toward one another. And then he divides all four of these, and not just for the purpose, which is what we do in preaching, to explain God's love, how God's love is different than our love. He goes a long way to explain how our friendship matters. And so I referenced that a bit in several of the chapters, but going back to the original question, why specifically the quest for friendship? Because really each chapter is surrounding a specific concept that we can pursue and build stronger friendships and relationships in our lives.
That's great.
Yeah.
So we just touched on a few concepts of the first chapter, which is called The Necessity of Friendship. Chapter 3 is called Know Your Own Lego. And I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah.
Please tell me more.
Okay. So Know Your Own Lego. It comes right after chapter 2. Chapter 2 is kind of important. Chapter 2 is this, okay, but what I know I need friends. How do I make friends? And we walk through that one is chock full of scripture, but also practical implications of what I've seen as I've counseled many, many people here in Las Vegas over the years, of individuals who really struggle with relationships, as I've counseled pastors who really struggle developing relationships. So this is my problem that I see quite often. Men especially have a very difficult time developing true, deep friendships with other men. I've spent the last 3 or 4 years before I would even knew that I was writing this book, asking eyeball to eyeball, we've talked about this multiple times, look across the table, and I'll look at a guy and I'll say, can I ask you a question? Sure. Tell me, how many men do you have in your life that you consider a true, deep, close friend that you could say anything to, that you could call up in the middle of the night, that you could have that type of relationship with? I'm telling you, 90% of the time, the immediate reaction is their eyes will drop to the floor and they'll look off to the right and they'll say, I mean, I have friends. There's an absolute denial of the need to even have that. And then whenever there's a realization, man, I don't have that, there's almost an embarrassment, like, what did I do? How do I make those friends? And so in that chapter, we really say, look, it's really going back to childhood. It's really going back to vulnerability. It's very much going back to, you're an 8-year-old boy with a bunch of baseball cards, and you're like, hey, I got baseball cards. You like baseball too? Yeah. And somehow we build up our defenses against that, and we've got to return to that. So that's what leads into, that's what chapter 2 is all about.
So that sounds like how to make good friends.
Yeah.
I think the original question, just kidding, was know your own Lego.
It was. I bypassed. Okay, so chapter 3, Know Your Own Lego, is core to understanding where this book goes.
Got it.
Know Your Own Lego is to say this. Every single man, woman, child is a Lego. You only have so many connectors. Some people are like those long Legos, right? They have 12 connectors, and they can connect to 12 different Legos if you really connect it properly.
Right.
Some people are like those 4-piece Legos, right, Drew? I mean, more of introvert, right? You don't got so many connectors.
Right.
Some people are like those big plates at the bottom of the Lego where everything can go on top. And
sure.
There's 168 connectors. That's my sister Charity. My sister Charity can feel genuinely connected to hundreds of people. And there are literally hundreds of people we could call right now and say, is Charity Tights or Charity Berkey a good friend of yours? And they would say, yeah, she's one of my closest friends. So there's a genuine ability to truly connect at that level. And in that, I talk about knowing your own Lego and being okay with your Lego, realizing I can connect. Now, what I've noticed, those who have fewer connectors often go deeper.
Right.
with those connections. Those who have more, maybe not as deep, but knowing how many connect. And I talk in that chapter quite a bit about the fact that if you only have a certain amount of connectors and you're trying to constantly bring people onto your Lego, you inadvertently are disconnecting from other people. You don't have the social bandwidth to be able to connect on a deep level with that many people. And so getting to a place to say, okay, I'm actually comfortable, because there are going to be people that read this book and say, I don't need a bunch of new friends. I just need to go deeper in my friendships. So we address that issue in that chapter.
Yeah, I heard it described recently as, you know, an introvert wakes up in the morning and has 5 coins, and throughout the day he gives them all away. And at the end of the day, they didn't have any left to show for it. Whereas an extrovert wakes up with 0 coins and they collect them throughout the day.
Oh man, I've never heard that.
I was like, awesome. As an introvert, I'm like, but I only have 5 coins. An extrovert can have like a billion at the end of the day, but that's just the reality of it. So
that's interesting.
I think that's a good parallel to your Lego analogy. So
yeah, but how much more valuable is it to receive a Lego from an introvert? Because you realize, I mean, this is one of their 5 coins.
Yeah. Hopefully people are grateful, but we'll see. All right. Chapter,
Drew, I am grateful.
Hey, I appreciate your
friendship. Yeah.
You can be one of my 5 connectors. It's all right.
Today,
please. Chapter 7, going through hell together, please.
Yeah, going through hell together. When we get to chapter 7, we've already established, okay, how do I make these friendships? Where are these friendships in my life? What are the different levels of friendship? In chapter 7, we say, going through hell together is never fun, but going through hell together is what makes the deepest relationships.
Hmm. Suffering.
Yeah.
The dark moments of life.
Yeah, when we suffer. This is where best friends are made. When we suffer, this is where our closest circle comes in. So when I talk about circles of friendship in chapter 4, I talk about best friends, close friends, my group, my tribe, my community, knowing where people fit into that. And how do people get into that? Well, at first they get in through attraction. Oh, I really like this person. I'm attracted to this person. I want to spend time with this person. And then mutual interest. But really, who is it that lives with you in and through entirety of life? It's those who you go through hell with. And we illustrate that multiple times through cinema and literature in that chapter. And in our own lives, we understand those who this is why you'll find certain couples that are deeply connected as friends throughout their marriage, because they have really learned that through the suffering, they don't have to allow it to split their relationship. It actually draws them closer together like never before. So going through hell together with your friend.
So that seems like a perfect segue into chapter 10, which is marry your best friend.
Yeah, okay. So once we get into chapter 10, we start talking about the marital relationship. Can I be friends with my partner? And the answer is absolutely yes. But one of the key aspects, and I'll just pull out one in that chapter, it's an extensive chapter, that we talk about is this. They need to be your best friend. The problem is they don't need to be your only friend. This is one of the big mistakes that I see with ministry leaders, and so I'm going to address ministry leaders, even though this book is not written to ministry leaders. Ministry leaders have a sense that, a lot of times have the sense that my wife is my friend, she's my only friend, she's the only friend I need, or the wife might think my husband is my friend, their only friend that they need. I talk about the fact that if that's the case, you are putting far too much undue pressure on this person to be everything that you need socially.
Sure.
This is why you'll find some women who will be so frustrated in counseling. They'll come in and say, you know, I get so excited about this new nail polish and he just doesn't care. And I look at him, I'm like, you're not paying attention. And he's like, I'm trying, but the game is on. And the answer is, you're talking about nail polish to a dude. The problem is not that he doesn't care about you.
Right.
The problem is, sweetheart, I love you. The problem is, sweetheart, you need to get some girlfriends.
Right.
Because that's an interest.
There's a different
of
audience you should be positioning that to.
Yes.
Like you're talking about.
Right. Or the guy is just absolutely needing his wife to be obsessed with golf the way he is. No, how about you, guy, go out and invest your relationship time in some guys that can be interested in the things you are. And so I find the healthiest marriages are those who invest in that relationship, but they don't expect that person to be all that they need socially.
Yeah, it's not healthy.
Oh, totally not healthy. So we talk about that in that chapter.
That's awesome. Well, there's a lot more chapters here. Before we wrap up today, I'd love to just let our audience know, like, where can they get this and how can they acquire this?
Okay, so today is February the 16th. By the way, happy Valentine's Day to everybody out there. Hope you had a good time a couple days ago. Now, February 16th, which means that the book is set to release in only about 3 or 4 weeks. And as it does, all you have to do is stay tuned to my Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm going to be posting all about it there. But the best way to get in contact with the book is right through the Idea Network store. You can pick it up right there. You can even pre-order it even now. And it should be shipping out middle of March. But yeah, I'm looking forward to you getting it.
Physical, digital?
No, physical. And is it going to be available on Kindle? Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't tell me that yet.
Audiobook? You going to read this to your audience?
I will read it
audiobook
to this
narrated
audience.
By Josh Tice.
I'll read it to this. Everybody wants this voice.
It's true.
Yeah. To read through
13 chapters.
Yeah, 13 chapters. That'll be fantastic. I'll make it as nasally as possible.
If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.